This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
I'd like to express my appreciation and the honour of being able to speak to you today on Ngambri Ngunnawal Ngunnawal land and pay my respects to the elders here today and elders past and the ancestors that all of us bring with us today into this conversation. Patsy and I are going to attempt the impossible, and that is do a quick sprint through the very complex history of our island and our people. It's a complex history, and my particular interest is in the visual representation of Aboriginal people, and in particular Tasmanian Aboriginal people, during a very complex and brutal time, which was dominated by what was known in Tasmania as the Black War, one of those wars, as Dawn reminded us earlier today, that Australia still refuses to recognise. This will be a joint presentation. I'll try to offer a snapshot of the situation in Tasmania to give you some context, and look at some key questions about the presence, or importantly, the absence of Aboriginal people in the visual record, and a little about the role of portraiture in presenting my ancestors during this turbulent period. Patsy will then focus more on the lives of the people sketched by John Skinner Prout. A number of these are included in the exhibition. When Skinner Prout arrived in Australia in 1840, he was already a successful painter, having exhibited with the Bristol Society of Artists in 1832 and the New Society of Painters in Watercolours in London. His visit to Van Diemen's Land in 1845, and together with other artists, including Simpkinson de Wesselow and later Bishop Nixon, to Wyabalena on Flinders Island, resulted in some very important images of our people. And that series of sketches which by Skinner Prout that's now held in the British Museum. I'm just going to have to jump, sorry. Prior to this, there had been a relative absence of Aboriginal people in portraiture and landscape. A good example of this, many of you will be familiar with the work of Joseph Lycett. He produced a series of views of Van Diemen's Land in New South Wales, published in London in 1824. A great number of his views of New South Wales either had Aboriginal people as his subject, hunting kangaroo, using fire, climbing trees to hunt possums. The views of Van Diemen's Land are completely absent. Aboriginal people are completely absent. Now, this is curious, considering that around that period, 1820 to 1822-23, we were building up to the most intense period of the Black War. Aboriginal people were certainly not absent from the minds of the colonists, and perhaps this is one of the reasons why, from a propaganda point of view, Lycett was persuaded not to include them. That's a matter of conjecture. This absence was the case until the end of the Black War. This painting, called The Conciliation, that some of you will recognise, is generally considered to be Australia's first history painting by Benjamin Deutero. He arrived in Hobart Town in 1832, shortly after the Big River Mob, who were the last armed resistance group in Van Diemen's Land, were cajoled into agreeing to a treaty with George Augustus Robinson, travelled with Robinson to Hobart Town to meet with the governor, where they had been promised that the governor would agree to all their requests, unquote. Of course, they were immediately packed off to Flinders Island. That was one of the last betrayals that occurred in Van Diemen's Land over the course of that war. So this period culminated in the exile of Tasmanian Aboriginal people to permanent offshore detention on Flinders Island, something that Australia is still trying to perfect. Ironically, it also coincided with painters such as John Glover repopulating the Tasmanian landscape with Aboriginal people, people who had just at great expense to the colony been bodily removed. The figures that that Glover populated his landscapes with were mostly based on images from his sketchbooks. And one particular sketchbook of his actually documented the Big River mob as they were being brought into Hobart Town by Robinson. Although these hardly qualify as portraits. Sorry, I've just jumped somewhere I didn't want to be. As well as Judero, another artist, the convict Thomas Bock, was commissioned to paint portraits of Tasmanian Aboriginal people by George Augustus Robinson. Robinson was intending on publishing his journals as a book, and he made a number of requests to artists for images that he intended to use to illustrate that publication. These portraits were so impressed the governor's wife, Lady Jane Franklin, that she requested that copies be made as, quote, interesting duplicates in profile, in neutral tint, so that the particular formation of the lower jaw of some of the Tasmanian Aborigines might be ascertained in any not to be seen in the principal portraits. These predated the photographic portraits produced by Charles Woolley as the earliest examples of what T.M. Huxley later defined in his Guidelines for Anthropomorphic Photography. Portraiture emerged, of course, from its beginnings in Egypt, to use on coins in Persia and sculpted portraits of philosophers such as Socrates in ancient Greece. They were a homage to power, authority, wealth, fame, or influence. But portraits of those without any high position in society are just as important. Unlike status portraits, which established conventions of idealized beauty, displaying a stoic, often aloof expression, and also depicting symbols of the subject's wealth and power, portraits of members of an underclass broke with these conventions, allowing artists to depict individuals in ways more common in genre painting. Caricature was common. Emotion, disfigurement, or quirks such as squints were laid bare to satisfy a fascination with or a disdain for otherness. This sketch was made by Gould of people who were being held on Grummet Island by George Augustus Robinson as he was removing people from the west and the southwest coast of Tasmania. Grummet Island is a small island off the coast of Sarah Island, which was one of the most severe penitentiaries for convicts in Van Diemen's Land. However, these, what I'm calling genre portraits, were not always disrespectful. The genre approach often resulted in portraits that are more powerful and evocative than was possible to achieve when painting a dignitary, who may have often commissioned the portrait themselves, enabling them to exercise considerable editorial control over the resulting representation. Skinner Prout's portraits, I think, are quite sympathetic. It was not uncommon, this isn't something new, it wasn't uncommon for country house owners in 18th century England to commission portraits of loyal servants. These are often statements of ownership or often in the same way that chattels of estates were used in commissioned paintings. But unlike status portraits, these would often focus on the communicative through gesture, expression, or in depicting everyday objects or activities rather than symbolic ones. In this way, such portraits are important as documentary works, often more candid or authentic than the carefully staged portrait of a high society subject. This painting of Alexander is a very good example. I might actually let Patsy talk about this because she speaks much more knowledgeably about this than I do. But we cannot forget that every portrait of the powerless is infused with the authorship of those commissioning the work. These portraits often speak of the representational otherness of the subject, intended to emphasise the conformity of the viewer to accepted or established norms. Some of these portraits, such as those by Prout, may have been at the initiative of the artist. In the tradition of ethnographic documentation, or more likely, in this case, due to the romantic appeal of the dramatic human tragedy that these people represented. As Shearer West says, traces of status in poses, gestures, and accoutrements of portraiture enabled viewers to respond in a way that tested their own perceived superiority over, inferiority to, or affinity with the subjects of the portraits. These Prout portraits, 170 years on from their production, I believe do all of these things. They evidence the difference between the indigenous people of the island and those who sought to replace them. They document the enforced poverty into which a formerly free people were now condemned. They raise questions about whether George Augustus Robinson's Wybalena project to transform freedom fighters into agrarian Christians was either just or realistic. At the time of their creation, the portraits gently restated what the too few colonists who defended the Tasmanian Aborigines against the worst of settler aggression had sought to do, to assert their common humanity, and just as gently ask what implications there might be for those who now benefited from their removal from what had been their home for 1,000 generations or more. Most importantly, because of the work of Prout and the freedom he had as an artist to visually explore all of their character and circumstance, unencumbered by the conventions of classical or anthropological portraiture that constrained the work that he and other portraitists in Van Diemen's Land like Bock had to observe, we have a rare window into the lives of these individuals who have continued to live across the generations for those of us who count them as ancestors, but who have largely slipped into obscurity for contemporary Australians. The Encounters exhibition allows these great souls to live again. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.